Welcome to the What's Your Ethos podcast, where we interview the leaders from insurance carriers, distributors, and insurtechs tackling some of the thorniest issues in the industry. Hi, I'm Peter Colas, the CEO of Ethos, and today we have with us Christian Mitchell, Executive Vice President and Chief Customer Officer at Northwestern Mutual. Northwestern Mutual is America's largest life insurer by a good margin, founded 165 years ago with more than $2.3 trillion worth of life insurance protection in force. Northwestern Mutual delivers financial security to more than 5 million people in life, disability income, long-term care insurance, annuities, and brokerage advisory services. At Northwestern Mutual, Christian is focused on the client experience. His team includes engineering, data analytics, digital products, consumer insights, and they're working to build the most powerful digital engine in the financial services industry today. Christian sits on the Northwestern Mutual's senior leadership team. I've gotten to know Christian over the past few years, and I think he's a remarkable leader. Christian, thank you for joining us today.
It's such a pleasure to be with you.
So, how did you initially get into the business of protecting families?
Yeah, so I came to Northwestern Mutual right after business school to join the private equity group. So doing deals for the Northwestern Mutual balance sheet. And in a funny twist of fate, went right into the great financial crisis. There weren't a lot of deals to be done. And I started to get tasked with looking at the financials of our competitors. So tearing apart their balance sheets, what they were doing on the liability side. And that path led me to the corporate strategy group of Northwestern Mutual from that investment group. And it's funny, I joined Northwestern Mutual actually not knowing really or having a deep appreciation for what it did for individuals and families. But once I joined corporate strategy, my eyes were opened to this incredible company. We have these advisors and these products, and we provide financial planning and all of this security. So it's kind of by a funny twist of fate, the great financial crisis introduced me to the wonderful financial security practice of Northwestern Mutual.
Wow. And so you went on to lead strategy, and then you went on to become president of Northwestern's wealth management company, from what I understand. And then how did you come into your current role focused on owning the advisor and the client experience? And then why is that a priority for the company?
Yeah, it was my career coming full circle. So when I was in corporate strategy, it was during that first generation of fintechs, and I got really interested in what they were doing. And so leveraging some of my investment background, we participated in the Series C of Betterment and then the Series D of LearnVest. I sat on Betterment's board for a short period of time. And then, as you well know, we ended up acquiring LearnVest. And a big part of the thesis of that acquisition was to jumpstart the client experience transformation of the company, to bring in new talent, new tools, a new way of thinking about taking these arcane and sometimes opaque insurance products and investment products and making them more accessible to our clients. So after I left corporate strategy, I did a fabulous stint in our wealth business, which I loved. But after that, I was brought back to essentially put back on track the financial planning effort that had been kicked off by the LearnVest acquisition. And that just, it started this whole different arc for my career. And I've been in technology, client experience, field experience ever since. And you asked why it's so important to us. It's absolutely central to our strategy. Historically, we provided fabulous product value, impeccable financial strength. But about 20 years ago, we came to this conclusion that client experience was going to be the next dimension where we needed to win, hence our push into that area.
So how have you been focused on reinventing the client and the advisor experience?
So really, the reinvention really starts with our North Star. And interestingly, it's a North Star that's been part of the company really since its founding, which is to do the right thing for our clients, is to actually make them better off financially, make them more financially secure, help them feel better about their money. So everything that we've done from a client experience perspective has been in that vein, whether it's making the financial plans more accessible, more consumer friendly, helping our advisors actually provide financial planning to more and more clients. That is really the driving force, the defining principle of our client experience. Of course, we want people to interact with our digital assets, visit our website, use our mobile app, but that's all really in service of making them better off financially.
It makes sense. And when you look 20 years into the future, how is the customer experience and the advisor experience going to be different?
I think it's going to be wildly different as powered by Gen AI. I have some interesting and provocative thoughts in terms of what that might look like.
Let's hear them.
So I think Gen AI is going to be just an absolutely unbelievable, disruptive, but also propulsive force that is going to allow us to provide a level of financial planning, a depth of financial planning to such a wider swath of Americans. It's going to make that whole process a lot cheaper and so more accessible. But what I get really excited about is the new financial planning discussions that it will open up. So I can paint a little vignette for you. You have to bear with me. But imagine that you're meeting with your advisor at some point in the future in the metaverse, and that advisor is doing some fact finding on you, asking you what your hopes and dreams are. And you've got like an OpenAI Sora-like, you know, engine in the background that is actually helping you realize or visualize those future plans in real time. So if you were to tell your advisor, hey, I really want, you know, my dream is to have a lake house in northern Wisconsin on this specific lake, you could be in the metaverse in your lake house, this, you know, prospective notional lake house in the moment. And why I think that is so powerful is so much of financial planning and the work that our advisors do is about deferred gratification. Make these tough decisions today so you have this great future. Well, using generative AI, the metaverse, other tools, we can essentially help people taste that future now and then put them in a better position to make some of those more disciplined decisions today. So that's the stuff I get excited about, where what hasn't changed is that human client intimacy interaction, but everything around it is much richer.
When you see the rate of improvement in the efficiency of these models, and you project out 15, 20 years, and you think about, you know, the financial advisory role of intaking information, making a recommendation, executing upon that recommendation, do you see this as an enabler or a disruptor?
I think it's going to be a massive enabler. And I think it's going to be an enabler not only of the value proposition that we offer today, but I think more importantly, the value proposition that is going to be most relevant going forward. I think the value prop of our industry changes fundamentally. And I'll give you another kind of what if future vignette. I think we are embarking upon an era of incredible advancements in human longevity. You know, the large language models or these transformer trained models, they are fabulous at writing, you know, term papers for my high school kids, but they also can fold proteins, do all kinds of medical research. I think it's going to open up just a massive new era of personalized medicine that's going to significantly expand human life, which is wonderful for society and the world, potentially problematic for life insurance companies. Yeah, you know, if longevity is increased to a certain extent, it could actually start to impact core demand for our product. So what's the reaction to that? I think we're going to have to reimagine the value proposition. I think it's going to bring in more wellness elements, a more holistic package, a new bundle essentially for clients. And I think Gen AI is going to be a really important tool to assemble and essentially deliver that new bundle or value proposition.
Interesting. Focusing on your health span rather than just your lifespan.
Yep.
So if we take a step back, you know, most of our listeners here today are working at life insurance carriers or distributors or somewhere in our ecosystem. Can you tell us about Northwestern Mutual? What are your core products? What's your general business strategy? How do you go to market? What are the key differentiators between Northwestern and its competitors? You know, where are you really strong? Obviously, it's hard to encapsulate in a summary because of how large and sprawling Northwestern is, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'll do so via a little bit of a walk down memory lane, our history. So our core franchise, the legacy of the company is life insurance. And as you mentioned, we continue to sell a tremendous amount of life insurance. But one of our superpowers historically has been the depth of client relationship that our advisors are able to generate. They really get to know their clients and want to serve a wide range of needs. And what that resulted in was us getting into the wealth business about 20 years ago. So initially, that wealth business was somewhat of an add-on to the value proposition. So at one point, the advisor would take off the life insurance hat and start talking about brokerage products or what have you. Where our strategy has really evolved and where we stand today is the blending of the two. So our distinction in the market, our differentiator is what we call protect and prosper, where we're offering insurance and investments together, not as an add-on, but really something that's synergistic. So if you think about the cash value that's in a life insurance policy, it's certainly there for the death benefit, but it offers you tax advantage savings. You can use that in really innovative ways to solve the sequence of return problem that sometimes people face in retirement. So that's the synergy between those products, bringing that to life in a financial plan. That's really our secret sauce today. And it certainly, as I alluded to, rests upon the incredible quality of our advisors. We're really blessed to have just an amazing, growing, evergreen group of advisors that can make that promise come to life for our clients.
That makes sense. So, you know, looking at the life insurance segment, I think it was reported that Northwestern issued over $1.1 billion of new individual premiums last year, which is 35% more than the next largest company. What do you attribute that just immense success to? You've got an amazing advisor model. Is there anything else that really played into that?
Yeah, I would cite what we call our foundational pillars. And so these are aspects of who we are, our competitive advantage that are durable through time. They were as true 100 years ago as they are today, and hopefully they are applicable going forward. We start out with our mutual structure, which to some might seem like a little bit of an anachronism, but this incentive alignment where we generate economics and those economics are plowed back to the policyholders as opposed to some other constituent. I think that's really, really powerful, and that resonates with clients once they get to know it. We have our unbelievable financial strength, our fortress-like balance sheet, AAA. When times are good, sometimes clients don't value that as much, but when we hit rocky spots, they value that a lot. You couple that with our exclusive distribution, so this advisor force that we largely recruit right out of college and then spend their careers with us decades long. They have this decades-long relationship with Northwestern Mutual, and then in turn, this decades-long relationship with their clients. And all of that produces fabulous product values. We actually look at the economics of the whole life contracts, universal life annuities that we offer. We offer just a fabulous economic deal. So in addition to what I articulated around protect and prosper insurance investments together, these foundational pillars have been a huge part of our lasting success.
And if you could wave a magic wand and change Northwestern Mutual in one key way, whether it's entering a new market or overhauling some legacy technology or something else, how would you change the company?
I would clean up our data. We have made tremendous strides. Hats off to the folks on my team that have waded through all of that. But we just need to fundamentally change our data model. And it's as simple as things like the data model of life insurance, of Northwest Life Insurance Company or Northwestern Mutual. Historically, it was centered around policy numbers.
Yeah.
We actually had to more recently create the idea of a client, rather than creating policies and account numbers and then trying to recreate the idea of a client on the back end, actually create a data field of a client on the front end, and then policies or financial plans, et cetera, become attributes of that. So we're making good progress again, as I would say, but if I had a magic wand, I would love to just clean up all of the data issues that we have, because it's such an enabler of the future.
People who don't work in technology often hear the term tech debt, but I'm not sure that they're familiar with the concept of data debt, and it is real. And it's kind of a never-ending, a never-ending adventure. So
it is, and the stakes keep getting higher because, one of the ways, if I think about how client expectations or preferences have changed, 10 years ago, people weren't talking about data privacy or data or cybersecurity, maybe a little bit, but the number of questions that we get from our clients on those issues, they just increase year after year. So we've got to deal with the data debt, and then we also have to keep up with everything that's going on from a regulatory and client experience perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting because, everyone knows that every insurance company is a data company. But what I realized was when I got into the industries, there's both a limitation to a traditional carrier's ability to access, and then depending on how much they control or don't control the end-to-end experience, being a captive model, you guys control more the end-to-end experience, but they have a limited ability to influence the process or improve with that data. Oftentimes it's, contained to, underwriting decisions or other kind of more fundamental things. So
that's absolutely right.
So Christian, you've been on a multi-year journey to, you know, improve, rebuild the advisor experience. What's gone well? What has not gone well? What's been more challenging than you originally anticipated?
I think what the biggest obstacle, maybe I'll start there, the biggest obstacle we've faced, and I think this is true of both the advisor experience and the client experience within the four walls of Northwestern Mutual and outside, is good old-fashioned change management. Getting our internal employees to think differently about the client experience, to take an experience mindset in the first place, to get acquainted with the principles of design thinking, to tell different stories about what success looks like, to embrace different visions of the future. And then that plays out in similar fashion amongst our advisors. They are out there working every day, and efficiency is everything to them. And so if you're coming to them and saying you need to learn a new process or a new tool, you're essentially taking time out of their practice, which is quite precious. And so the change management exercises that we've had to go through to upskill them, to help them understand how to incorporate more sophisticated aspects of planning or even new planning tools, that has by far been the biggest obstacle that we faced. The biggest success, interestingly, is almost the flip side of that, where when we've built the best digital experiences, the most powerful tools, the most incredible approaches to the market, it's really been in a partnership with our advisors. So we bring them in, again, as you mentioned, being a captive, having a captive force, this is where we have, I think, a distinct advantage, that we bring them in and we show them visualizations. If we want to launch a new module in our planning tool, what works, what doesn't, we're able to mine their on the ground intuitive experience of working with clients and make those tools, those digital assets even better. So that co-creation, as we call it, I think is really powerful and something that I'm really proud of.
Makes sense. So at the center of your strategy is this amazing captive advisor force that you have made thrive as a business model. Most other carriers haven't seen the same success with captive forces, and some large carriers have shed their captive forces and moved towards an independent distribution model. There are many pros to it, like the control over the end-to-end experience. One of the cons is the cost structure, but I'm just curious, how do you think overall about making that model work really well for you when a lot of the market has gone the other way?
Yeah. And look, there's so many ways you can win at this distribution game. I don't think there's a single mousetrap that's preferable. I think as you talk about captive cost is an interesting issue. Some of the carriers that abandoned their captive forces cited cost. I think having a captive force can be very, very expensive in the short run. But I think if you look at it over decades, in terms of the liabilities that you're able to originate, in terms of the persistency of the business that a captive force can put on the books, and the financial strength that flows from that, I actually think it's incredibly cost effective. But in the short term, it can be pretty challenging from an expense perspective, because maintaining that recruiting machine, you know, going out and finding those young people and trying to train them up and helping them be successful, it's really, really hard in the trenches work.
And how many advisors does Northwestern Mutual recruit per year? I'm just curious.
We recruit about 3,000 a year.
3,000. So it's a big machine.
Yeah. It is a big machine. Yeah.
So, you know, accessibility to life insurance has become a pressing concern. Curious, how do you think about envisioning, you know, the industry addressing this issue of reaching underserved markets and creating more points of access? Is there anything that Northwestern is specifically doing to grow within, outside of the high net worth and mass affluent markets, let's say?
Yeah. Interestingly enough, it relates to the past question. One of the really powerful aspects of our model of recruiting so many people and recruiting people outside just graduated from college or even via our internship program during college is they sell to their natural market. And so we by nature are selling a lot of policies and establishing relationships with a lot of folks that are not, perhaps someday they become high net worth or ultra high net worth, but they're just in their first job, you know, trying to make ends meet. So we really touch a segment of the US population that many carriers don't. And what's been really heartening over the last few years is how, if you look at our recruit base, what percentage of that is either female women or people of color. So about 50% of our recruits today are either people of color or women, which is just gives us, again, people sell to their natural market. It gives us an incredible ability to touch those segments that historically have been underserved.
That makes sense. And when you look at the industry overall, where have you been most frustrated by a lack of innovation?
The place that is on my mind mostly, and it relates to a deep societal need, is long-term care. I think it is such a glaring need, and I just don't see many carriers doing a lot of interesting innovation there to design that product in such a way that you can get it in more people's hands, perhaps make it less capital intensive. I just think there's a huge, huge opportunity there. And it's too bad that right now the industry is innovating a lot on what I would call financial engineering, which is incredibly important, not to denigrate that. Use of offshore and all of that. I think that's a part of offering attractive, cost-effective protection. But it's unfortunate, perhaps, that that's crowded out some of the more fundamental product innovation that I think could really address an unmet societal need.
It makes sense. So reflecting back on your career with Northwestern Mutual, I'm curious, what are some of the biggest obstacles that you've had to overcome in your journey?
Yeah, I would reiterate the change management. That has been by far the biggest obstacle that I've just faced in different guises. The technical challenges are hard. Building a new planning tool is difficult. Changing compensation is difficult, the actual math of it. But then when you actually need to go out and move, you know, displace an existing financial piece of financial planning software and get them onto a new planning software to change compensation, to have other tools adopted. I'll give you another example that we're facing right now, and this is more internal as opposed to with the field force, is getting our employee base upskilled on Gen AI. What is it? How could it be powerful? How could they incorporate it in their day-to-day? What does it mean to actually write a good prompt? Where can the models do amazing things? Where might they fall short? Again, it's a different manifestation of this change management exercise that just occurs again and again.
Makes sense. So switching focus to your leadership, you successfully lead large teams through difficult to achieve feats. I'm curious, at a high level, what are the three things that you focus most on in your day?
Yeah. So I'll give you the three aspects of my leadership, like kind of core to who I am, and I think it flows through to my teams, and then I'll talk about what I focus on every day. So how I'm wired as a leader, like first and foremost, I want to serve the greater good. I work for a for-profit entity. We want to make money. We want to generate economics for our policyholders. But what really animates me is working for something that's bigger than me, something that's going to help society be better off. I think it motivates me, and I think it's something that teams find inherently motivating as well. I like to deliver big, elegant solutions. So the willingness to tackle the big problems and find a clever way of moving forward. And then lastly, enjoying the journey together. You know, we may not be best friends with all of our colleagues at work, but having mutual respect and integrity and enjoying the hours that we spend with them, that's really what animates me as a leader. Yeah, how that manifests into my day-to-day. I spend a lot of time actually looking at the external environment, listening to podcasts, reading articles, talking to industry folks to really make sure that I'm keeping my finger on the pulse of what's going on out there, particularly in the Gen AI space. That's where I devote a lot of discretionary time. Secondly, I listen a lot. I have one-on-ones with my people, as all executives do, but I really focus on listening. And I think one of my superpowers as a leader historically has been the willingness to listen and then change my mind, you know, not necessarily stay in the state of mind that I have all of the answers, but really look at crowdsourcing and being open to the interesting things that might bubble up through the organization. And then the last thing that I spend a ton of time thinking about and actioning on a day-to-day basis is talent. So understanding the talent on my team, coaching them, and then looking more deeply in the organization and trying to think about who are going to be those incredible leaders, succession candidates, future executives of the company. That's particularly someone at my level with the organization that I have. Talent management, pipeline, it's the name of the game.
And when you click into talent, a lot of large companies in financial services sometimes struggle to retain amazing technology talent. How have you done that? How do you attract them? How do you retain them?
Yeah, my best tool to retain that talent goes back to this concept of serving the greater good. If you can find people in the tech landscape, and there are a lot of them out there that really care deeply about this mission of helping people be better off financially, and really engage them and give them great work around that, they will stay with you and will climb whatever hill you want to climb. You know, money is so personal. People have experiences from their own childhood or their parents or their grandparents. If you can find the right person and tap into that passion, you can have an incredibly loyal workforce.
It makes sense. So I'm curious, what advice would you offer to young professionals who are looking to make their mark on the life insurance sector while staying attuned to the industry's evolving landscape and some of the major technology forces at work, like you described earlier?
Yeah, I think the disruption that we are going to face is going to favor people that are rangy. So I would encourage people to develop range. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have a specialization in tech or data analytics or product development, but I think in an intentional education to understand the entire value stream within your company, understand the industry is incredibly important, and to make sure that curriculum of driving range has a really, really strong tech and data element to it. Having the future executives of our industry, I think, are going to have this broad thinking ability, but are going to be really, really sharp at the intersection of business and technology, and are going to be able to move seamlessly back and forth and translate between those two worlds. I think too many companies and too many groups in our industry, there's too stark of a line of demarcation between kind of the quote unquote business and the technology teams that are actually making the magic happen on a day-to-day basis.
Makes sense. So let's get to know you personally. What's the last topic or subject that you went deep on learning about that didn't have anything to do with work?
So during COVID, one of my COVID hobbies that I took up was playing guitar. Oh. I am terrible at it, but I love it and I still do it. So it's one of those few COVID hobbies that actually stuck. And I got interested in vintage guitars. So I went like way down the rabbit hole on pre-CBS Fender guitars.
Wow.
So Fender was sold to CBS, big conglomerate, in the late 60s. And the pre-CBS Fender guitars are the really incredibly toned, you know, most beautiful guitar. So I went way down the rabbit hole, seeing if I wanted to dip my toe in the water and purchasing one of them.
Who's your current favorite guitarist to listen to?
Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Okay.
And, you know, he's no longer with us, but he's, in my book, he's really the king.
Very cool. Where do you and your family like to vacation?
My favorite vacation spot is our lake house on Lake Michigan. So it's about, I'm sitting in the Northwestern Mutual offices right now. It's about 50 minutes north, beautiful sandy beach out in the woods. We usually go up and spend about a month up there in the summertime. The kids can run around barefoot, play in the water. It's peaceful, wonderful. That's my happy place.
So for anyone who hasn't been to Milwaukee, Northwestern Mutual is headquartered there. And it's kind of the big boy on campus. If you look at the skyline, you can't miss it. So what's the last book that you read?
So this is kind of a funny one. I majored in French in college and I try to maintain my French. I do what I can. I don't have much opportunity to speak it, but I thought, well, I'm going to read a book in French, but I thought I need to read something that I know the plot line of pretty well, just in case if I get into some difficult passages. So I actually just finished The Lord of the Rings in French.
Wow. It's incredible books. And then last question is, what is the best advice that you've ever been given or given to somebody else?
The best advice I was ever given was, this was early in my executive career and was suffering a little bit from imposter syndrome that dogs a lot of executives as they go up the rungs of the ladder. And I was talking to my boss at the time and just kind of commiserating with her about how I felt and was I worthy and were people listening to me. And she gave me a little bit of dose of tough love and said, nobody cares. It doesn't matter. Just participate. Jump in. You're in the role. Just do it.
Yeah.
And it was just the thing I needed to hear at the moment to kind of get out of my head and dive in. And so whenever I feel a little bit of that imposter syndrome or a little bit of that sense of self-doubt, her words ring in my head again.
The world was built by people who are no smarter than ourselves, and you can do anything and change it and influence it.
That's the truth.
Christian, it was wonderful speaking with you. I know our listeners got a lot out of this. Thank you for taking the time. We will see everyone next time.
Thanks so much. It was great to chat.
Take care. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode of What's Your Ethos? If you're interested in helping to protect the next million families, come join us. You can learn more about Ethos at ethoslife.com. I'll see you next time.